given time period. So maybe even 3 hours into the shift. The third hour might be worse. Maybe more than 8 hours, but how much over 8 hours? Is it the 14th? Is it the 16th? Is it the 20th? I think that things have to be looked at in that regard. And right now, the tunnels, where they are working underground, do not have the time limit of the hours.
Yeah. We do have free fall load operation.
Further questions to the witness? Okay, then thank you very much. Is Gil Dubs to testify on this particular piece of legislation? State your name and who you represent.
My name is Gilbert Dobbs, and I actually am out of my own representation. I believe that this legislation can either be good or bad. I've had the experience in the mining industry for over 30 years underground. I believe that the 8-hour restriction on mines as a whole is prohibitive for a lot of mines, as an example for Green Screen. However, I also am a little reluctant to urge you to just open the door to 10 hours or 12 hours a day for every mine, because the majority of mining industries or mining operations are a good deal like Green Creek. They're very safe, very well managed, and the concern of the employee is paramount, but there are a few that will start up that don't have those same concerns. And I myself, in this instance, believe that 10 hours would not be out of line at all for 10-hour shifts. You need to keep a handle on some of the other companies, some of the other mining operations around the state. I don't know how you're going to handle that, but from my viewpoint, there are conditions that 10 hours a day or more, sometimes even 8 hours a day, is almost too much for them. And MSHA does a very good job of inspecting the mines. However, as stated by someone else in this investigation, they have very limited funds. In the state of Alaska, as an example, they are very fortunate to arrive at a mine once every 3 months. Branching, they come unannounced, and their regulations are stringent, to say the least, but they're not really always a real good watchdog due to that limited funds. I would think that there should be some way to rent Green Creek as an example, or 10-hour work day, but also I would like to feel like we have a handle on other operations that may not be quite so well organized, and the environment underground is so good. Any questions?
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for the witness? President Boucher?
Have you worked in Alaska? Anybody?
Yes, sir. I've been in Alaska for about 17 years, and worked in nearly all of the mines that have worked up here in that period of time, as well as a good many of the tunnels.
How much capacity?
Usually as a miner or a shift boss or superintendent.
Have you seen this operation out here at all?
I've never been out to the project. I've seen some of the maps and plans, yes. I know several of the guys that have worked there in pastures in their exploration phase. They're all impressed with the ground conditions and being real good ground and the air conditions so far. But ventilation is a big problem in mines. And even the best mines can get in a position where the ventilation is not really as good as it could be. Usually that's a temporary thing. There are the best mines sometimes find themselves in a position where the ventilation is not very good.
Are there further questions of the witness? Thank you, sir. Is Phil Holdsworth, are you here to testify about this particular piece of legislation?
Chairman,
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Phil Holdsworth, and I'm speaking for the Alaska Miners Association. First, I would like to say that last night in Fairbanks, where the Placer Mining Convention is on. The Board of Directors of the Miners Association passed a resolution supporting this piece of legislation. They are not aware or have not had a chance to review the Department of Labor's suggested amendments, but they are in support of the original bill. As has been stated, there are other mines that are in a different position than Greens Creek. And I don't think that this legislation, whatever it may turn out to be, should be considered a bill just for the benefit of one mine. I went through all the hard rock mines that are currently of interest in Alaska, and there are 18. And of those 18, 16 have been former producers of record, and there is interest in all of those today, particularly because of the current price of gold. As you know, precious metals are the business to be in today. Starting with the Little Squaw Mine in the Chandelier District on the north, and you go down through the Fairbanks District, there's Clary Hill and the Grant Mine. There's even an underground placer mine in the Livingston District, which is in operation. The Golden Zone Mine and the Rail Belt, halfway between Fairbanks and Anchorage. And the Vesna Mine in the Wrangell Mountains, which I operated for 6 years in the early days. And it was a very lucrative mine, and there's interest renewed in that again now. The Willow Creek District, there is the Fern and the Gold Court, which are still active and of interest. Out in the Aleutians, the Apollo Mine on Alaska Island. And aside from Greens Creek, the only other mine in this list that has not been a producer in the past is the Johnson River Prospect on the west side of Coquimbo. A lot of money has been spent on drilling that in the past 2 years. Over in southeast here on Chichikov Island, the Chichikov Mine on the Hearst Chichikov is now being explored underground by the same company as at least on both properties. And they have heard a clean stake operation over there as it developed some additional tonnage. In the Berners Bay District, just north of Juneau here, there are four properties, the Jewellen, Comet, Kensington, and the Johnson Lode, which are being looked at today. There are about five different companies trying to get the owners to sign an agreement with them, because that is a belt, continuous belt, that's tied with the Treadwell over here across the Juneau Gold Belt. And it's been identified that those have been former producers, all of them. There's Greens Creek then, and then in the Juneau Gold Belt, of course, is the AJ Mine, which is being fairly studied. So that this bill passed would not benefit just one mine, but it would develop, would be beneficial to quite a group of mines once they get developed and underway production again. Basically, that's all I have to say, and I thought I'd run down and the fact that you will have a copy of that resolution will come down to the committee. They called me this morning if they'd passed that.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions for members of the committee? No questions. Thank you very much. Tom Cash.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Cashin, IBW. We'd like to encourage mining and every other industry in Alaska, like we always have, but and have a good business climate. But we'd like you to take a long look at this thing, you know, not just arbitrarily wipe out labor laws that have been in effect for 60, 70 years, just because somebody thinks it's a good idea to make a good business climate. We don't know if, you know, we hear lots of testimony from the company and how the employees like it. We don't know that. Our information tells us that there's 15 people working out on a mine, and a cook and another worker from Alaska, and the rest of them are from Idaho and Montana. We haven't had a chance to talk to anybody. I don't think this legislation is absolutely necessary to their operation this year. They've got a $70 or $80 million mill and some other work this summer they're talking about. The company's told us that. I think maybe we ought to take a look and see what kind of track record they have. Clean up their act and study this more. Take a look at it later on. We need to stampede it and pass the removing the law that's been on the books since 1917. I realize things aren't pros, as my grandfather and great-grandfather were miners here, but there's still a reason for it. So we're not just being arbitrarily against it, but I think we have to go take a look at any of our labor laws or just wipe them off the books to make a big, good business climate. That's coming from the people that are pro-development. Thank you,
Mr. Cashman. Are there questions of the witness?
Question of the previous witness. I was going to ask Phil and I forgot. How did the AJ and the other operations operate with the territorial law? I mean, did they just ran their planned 3 8-hour shifts a day or something like
Mr. that? Mr. Holtzman, could you step forward when you answer that so the microphone could catch that? Thanks, Tom.
Well,
kind of caught AJ in the rep room.
That's why, as just been stated by the previous witness, that in the early days things were a lot different, and there was not there was no MSHA on this sort of thing to keep track of the safety. And as you probably have heard, in those early days they had those bulldoze chambers where there were quite a few men were killed. And then on the other hand, across the channel here, you had the Treadwell, which got flooded out, and there wasn't a single man lost in that. They were watching that very closely. So that it varied quite a bit, and it will vary from line to line, and that's, you have to keep your eye on these operations.
How did they organize their work day under that? Did they have three shifts, a rotating shift, or?
Most of the mining underground was done by contract. They had these go out with under contract with a raise. They have a contract and they had hire their own men, the contractor. They'd go in and they'd take a certain portion of the mine. And they'd, using the block caving method, they would drive these, what we call coyote holes, and then finger raises out of that and load it with fodder and then shoot it. And it just began caving from the surface down. So that their time was established really by each individual group.
Now, essentially, that was established by the amount of time it took for the powder and smoke
That's
to
right.
blast at the end of the day and then come back the next day and muck it out.
That's one advantage of the 10-hour shift, where you can have a 2-hour break between the two shifts to do your ventilation and your maintenance and lubrication, that sort of thing on your equipment. That's quite an advantage to be able to do that. You don't run a mine underground 3 8-hours or what have you, because you do have to, after a blast, you have to get your ventilation up to standard and so on.
Thank you.
One other point I'd like to make that has been missed about, and this business of hiring miners, you know, there has been so little underground mining in this state for so many years that there is not a core of a qualified miner. The question you asked me about. I'm 76 years old and I can still go out and run a machine. I've been doing that for 55 years in Alaska. So that's one of the problems I'm starting out. They will have to have training programs and eventually have all trained their own local people as much as possible.
Thank you, sir. Don Rulo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, I'm Don Rulo. I'm with the District Council of Labor and also represent the state's AFL-CIOs. We're very concerned about this legislation. In fact, the District Council of Labor has just completed a study, and I have not seen it. I hope to have it here today. I will have it before the committee next week. Each one will get a package where it shows, in fact, that The number of accidents on overtime hours total in volume, not percentage, more than the regular 8-hour day. And that's why we're concerned about this legislation. This legislation here, the worker is in Juneau. He gets up, he has breakfast, he drives out to Ox Bay, he then has a lengthy boat trip, he then takes the bus up the road, and I believe that's going to be, right now it's I think 3/4 of an hour, so we're going to cut it down to 1/2 an hour. So before he even gets on the job and changes clothes at the mine site, he faces his 8-hour shift. After the shift is over, he showers, he changes his clothes again, he jumps on the bus, and then on the boat, back to town, little time he's got left for his family, goes to sleep for a while, then he's on the job again. So we do have a real concern for the safety here. So you're not looking, I think, at just a 10-hour day, you're looking at 15 hours, 16 after he's finished with his family, or 17 if he wants some time with his kids. And I think we've got to look at this very carefully. We'd like to have a good business climate in this state also, but not at the expense of the worker when it comes to safety. We're also concerned about a firm that has come into Alaska. They want a better business climate, but yet at the same time, I believe there is one miner on the job from Alaska now, and the firm may correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they've got two more from up down south this week. So I believe there is, as far as blue collar, to my knowledge, there's two. There's an electrician, one miner. So let's not have a better business plan for, at the detriment of the worker. So I think we've got to look at this bill and look at it good, and we will have that studied for you next week.
Thank you, Mr. Rolo. Any questions of the witness? Representative Copeland?
You represent tunnel workers at Halco?
That's correct.
Roughly how many tunnel workers have you run through your program? Or do you have?
I don't have the count, but I know that we could man a good-sized manning job at Greens Creek. We have some on Snedisham right now.
Have you any of the locals affiliated with the district council had dispatched people, let's say to the graph line or any of the other?
Yes,
ones?
Sir.
You know how many people are involved there?
I certainly will have that information next week. I think maybe we can get the answer here. Do you know how many were out there at the graph line?
Well, they weren't dispatched, but there were the last miners at that point. Mr. Dobbs was
okay.
Any numbers we have?
But we can't fill the jobs. And we do have a good training school.
Any information you have on the training school, David?
We will supply that.
Representative Boucher and Representative Ellis.
When Mr. Richardson was testifying, that question was asked, and I've got a note down here that said local hire was 50%, and Alaska hire was 50%, and those were for 3 years. And the criteria was 3 years in Alaska, and they were 40%. There seems to be some discrepancy as to what was said there in the comments that you just made.
Yeah, well, my sources are
not here.
Oh, I think I heard that, and I thought it was that their goal was 50% higher than Belcher, not that they're currently at 50% higher.
Rates are correct.
Okay.
The notes are correct.
I believe they said they had 40% higher, local hire now.
So why would you say 3 years?
I don't know. Well, as far as miners go, I believe that I don't think he was applying that to the miners, but the overall operations staff included, as far as management staff and secretaries.
How many, Mr. Chairman, what is the correct picture? How many people are working out there now?
I believe in the mine itself, the companies here, they can answer that, but I believe it's around 8. Is that correct? How many miners?
I don't have that information, but what I can do is I will submit information to the committee that gives an entire list of people. There's about 35 people employed by the project now, and we'll submit the names of the people and when they came to Alaska and how long they've been in Alaska, so we can resolve this question.
I mean, okay, good.
It's subject to factual resolution as opposed to
big. And it's not really not an issue on this bill, but it does come down to the fact that they, you know, we just don't want to improve the business climate at the expense of the worker safety. I think that's the bottom line.
Representative Ellis?
And Don, what was your problem with the figures given to us that Representative Ulmer referenced in terms of
Representative Ellis, I have
injuries
not
under safety. The difference between 8 hours and 10 hours.
I have not seen that, and I haven't seen our report either, but I understand the information I give you is just accurate.
Could you take a, Mr. Chairman, could you take a copy of this with you and maybe be able to comment when you submit your report on what the shortcomings of this are?
Sure will. If I should get a copy of that.
Are there any further questions of the witness? Go ahead,
Thank you.
Well, it's the intent of the chair to ask you. Attorney General's office for opinion on the jurisdiction of occupational safety on this matter and hold this over for additional hearings.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Boucher.
Was that your, what Mr. Shepard said that Alaska OSHA only has jurisdiction during construction?
Yeah, I'm concerned with that. I'd like to check up on that.
Wasn't that the statement that was made?
Yeah, that was the testimony.
Mr. Shepard made that. Yeah, I had that underscored here, too.
Representative,
before we move on, Mr. Chairman, could I make a request of Mr. Tangent also to clear up? I heard something different from the chairman, from one of the witnesses about the goal. I didn't think it was 50% local hire or resident hire was the goal, but was a projection of...
Mr. Chairman, my name is J.P. Tangent, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the Gaines Creek Mining Company. What Mr. Richardson testified to was very specifically that the commitment of the project is to have a minimum of 50% local hire on the project. Currently, because of the fact we have a fairly small number of people employed by the project now, it's about 35%, as I said a moment ago, the number, and we're hiring on a daily basis one or two people at a time, the number of people there, it varies, and there's in excess of 40% of the people now. The reason for the fact that are Alaskans, you know, that are hired locally, that are picked up or acquired through local solicitations for employment. The explanation for the low number, what I regard as a low number, is because of the fact that, first of all, most of the people that are on the scene now are representatives of AMSALCO, which has just recently acquired the interest of the project and have come to the project as part of the management team. The second thing is that the amount of hiring that's been done has been very small up to this point. But they are in the process of expanding. They have a commitment to hiring locally. That is to say, this would be Juneau would be the point of hire, and furthermore, that they have training programs that they are blocking out. They're in the process of blocking out now. But as far as the actual numbers are not wonderful. I can concede that. The intent of the company is to get up to a point where a minimum of 50%, and they're going to shoot for 90 or 100% to the extent that they can do so over time. It'll take a while to get people trained and up to speed on that. With all due respect to Mr. Rouleau, it's contrary to my understanding that there is a workforce available in the state right now to just step in and fulfill all the jobs that are required.
I'd like to find that out. I've got a lot of respect for Phil. Been around here since Bill Eaton's days as a commissioner of natural resources. Correct. And he would know. I'd like to get some figures there, and then Don, some from you too. In other words, where are they located by skill, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Sir.
Because I've seen these figures every time they come up, they wander all over the place, and depends upon whose numbers you're looking at.
Representative. We give people some time to pull those together and submit those to the committee staff in written form, have those added to your packets, and then we can have that before us next hearing we have on this subject. Did you have an additional comment?
I just wanted to say, Representative Butcher, I also requested that of AFL because presumably that would be worthwhile. We'd like to have their names as well. We want to know who they are, too.
Great. Okay, thank you, sir. Well, the next matter on the committee's agenda is House Bill 46, and if you recall, we held that over till today so we could have some written proposals in front of us for proposed amendments.
Can I help with this? Yes. Excuse me, gentlemen. In your packet, in your committee file on House Bill 46, you'll see a series of amendments by Representative Donwell that were drafted at the committee's request. Those amendments were not numbered, and to help us get through this, it would be easy if we numbered it, and also I need you to throw the first one away and replace it with this one.
And you also have some proposals from Representative Furness, and they're labeled with letters A, B, C, D, E, and versus the proposals from the chair, which are numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
This one replaces that one. Oh, no, I'm sorry, those are yours. I'm sorry. This one replaces the top amendment there.
We have to throw the first two pages away then.
No.
But that's
because
the
you didn't have an amendment number two. Yes, but in spite of its confusion, it actually refers to a separate section of the bills.
Okay.
Throwing away a little left then, agenda.
Yes. Yes, sir. The very first. The amendment by Donnelly that looks like this should be pulled out of your packet, and I'll throw it away, and it is replaced by this one. This
nobody complained about the co-op.
We have a new app.
Co-op code? Co-op being complicated? Oh, that thing.
Yeah.
Boy. Start open. It did. You can talk to Mike and John and son about that.
You don't have a whole packet.
TKO is a big. This is the thing, including yours, right? No, this is the committee substitute, and these are amendments. We've adopted that, and for purposes of discussion, now we're on the amendments.
Is there anybody else that needs correction?
Okay.
Well,
what I suggest is let's pass yours out. They're labeled with letters. And then if you see any that conflict, can you raise those at the time we bring up the numbered ones? And then we can have the two proposals with us and then make a choice. How does that sound? Does that sound fair?
That's good enough for me.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Oops.
Certainly.
Raj, do we have any more? Raj, I'm just interested.
Yeah,
that's
it.
You have a copy.
Got a whole thing, right?
Oh, you got it. Okay, now we've got the lettered ones and the numbered ones in front of us. Let's start with, yes, number one. It's the joint number one and number two. We'll just take the portion.
So this number two is obsolete.
Yeah, it is. Correct. Ginger? Ginger? That number two is obsolete, right?
Yeah.
That's correct.
Number
one and two.
Okay. Number two. Okay, I think we got to maybe you could just check and make sure we're on the same page. Okay. Number one requires a 20-day notice of cancellation of personal or last time we met, we talked about the problems that if there was a non-payment of premium, currently it requires a 10-day notice, and that we needed to clarify that. The proposal before us is to require a 20-day notice for non-payment of premiums. Now, right below that is number two. That proposes a 10-day notice for those for cancellation of premiums when there's been a conviction of a crime. That's related to the particular insurance, such as arson for fire insurance, or there's been a substantial representation or a fraud by the insured. It provides a shorter notice, a 10-day notice. So, do we have a motion for the?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, before you entertain a motion, can you refresh my memory as to Representative Davidson's concern?
Representative Davidson's concern on the cancellation of premiums was that 10 days wasn't sufficient, and given the geographical conditions in Alaska, the difficulty of people getting the notice and not knowing their insurance had been canceled within a 10-day time frame, you know, such as fishermen who were out on a boat
that's
and came
back.
That's where the 20 comes in. And the 10 days was what we all, well, we didn't all, I guess we had general consensus, it seemed to be, that in those two circumstances, even a shorter was appropriate when there was a crime, such as arson or a conviction for that. Is there any objection to amendment number
one? What are we talking about? This is amendment number one here?
Yes.
Number one. The number in the top right-hand corner is 5-0306LF.
That's the 10-day provision. That's the first two paragraphs of it.
Okay, now you said amendment number one. Are you looking at the whole page as amendment number one or just the...
Could we have a motion for amendment number one, number two, since they're here before us?
I move that we accept the amendment number one.
Okay.
I'll object.
Okay. What that provides, Representative Curtis, is that for cancellation of premiums for non-payment, it would require a 20-day notice. For cancellations of premiums on the commission of a crime or fraud or misrepresentation, would require a 10-day notice.
And I would maintain my objection to that, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have debate, Representative Curtis? Do you have any comments?
You're looking at lines from 18 to 810, insert 20, or line 18.
I think this covers the same, it appears to cover the same issues you've raised in your proposed amendment C and D.
Our proposal to maintain it at 10, Mr. Chairman.
So the issue is a choice between amendments 1 and 2 and amendments C and D. Is that
well, perhaps let me, explain how the C and D. Our desire here to keep that at 10 days, Mr. Chairman. In fact, the question now, do we go with the 10 days or do we go with the 20 days? So it's a matter of the committee.
Okay. So the question before the committee then is to whether or not to adopt amendments 1 and 2. There is an objection, so I guess we'll do this by a show of hands. All those
I'm not sure what is 1 and 2. Is this whole page 1 and 2?
Right, and there's two words on the next page, too. First, the cancellation appears on the next page. The words, the cancellation.
Okay. That's just at ease here. I want to read this and tell us how it differs.
Okay.
Now I can just talk
about this.
Yeah, please.
From Navarre and Son, all bought off of these. Yeah. Navarre and Son's people agreed to the number of dots. No, but what they do is they do what the industry wants to do, and shorten the resource and notice them 30 days. To stay with the 60 days. There you go.
At the very least,
before you get to the issue.
Yeah, what
do you have? A2 in here, done?
This is a diversion of keys. Non-payment is for 20 days, and the reasons to withdraw is 10.
I would like to put in a collective bargaining agreement.
If you also then you say 10 days here, it's the
representatives for the work, but individual people, it's a problem that you don't have anybody to protect it. The state is less and less
this
involved. We're coming back on the country more and more soon. We have the protection of the private sector.
10 days.
Also, tendency is we used to get a collective bargaining agreement and get a little hot pressure, especially the lack of person. So, because you're going to do it, you get technical preparation for the other.
No, you understand. If it's German,
it's on your. A week ago, it's on your.
Let's just go ahead and include it here. We could just tell Mr. Koch has a technical amendment he'd like to include. We can take that. Considered in what you're pointing to.
Mr. Koch, please. Sure. Okay, we're speaking to proposed amendments 1 and 2.
Yes, sir. I guess there's a question first, and if the answer to the question is yes, then you need a technical amendment. If you wish to limit, to 10 days, a cancellation for a drunk driving charge where a revocation license has been suspended. If you wish to, in those cases, provide for a 10-day notice of cancellation, you need an additional insertion on this first line of page 19, line 20, so that it would read, if cancellation is for a reason described in, your insertion would be here, AS 2136-210A2, or so that your insertion is AS 2136-210A2 or AS 2136-210F2 or 3. Basically what that does is that if you make that insertion, it says that a notice of cancellation for an automobile, a personal automobile policy can be sent with a 10-day notice.
I don't have a particular problem with that. Do any other members of the committee have an objection to that? Seeing no objection, we can, if there's no objection to orally incorporating it within this and having the staff roll that into the committee substitute, we can do that. So that
that's the
okay,
thing.
Taking that proposal.
The rest of this amendment indeed does what I've heard you talk about.
Okay. Representative Furness, do you continue your objection to this?
No, with that change.
Then amendments number 1 and 2 are adopted. Representative Furness, did those deal with the same issue as contained in your proposal?
Well, I believe to some degree.
Okay. Well, maybe we can address those separately. If there's some other remaining issues, we'll come back to those.
The only difference was we had proposed the 10, and amendment number 1 and 2 proposed 20, with the exception of that, if they're the same.
I guess my question is, have we effectively dealt with C and D by the committee's action on 1 and 2?
Let me just make sure. We've all talked about page 19. Okay. Page 19, line 20. I believe so.
Yeah. Thank you. Moving on to amendment number three. The one-page amendment reflects this. It requires that all cancellation notices for personal or commercial insurance state the reason for cancellation. Should be the next one in. Ginger, can you assist the members of the committee locating amendment number 3?
I believe in amendment number 3, the numbers at the top right-hand corner should be F-0306LH.
They all say that.
I don't.
The H is different.
Yeah. Okay, so it's 5-306LH. Yeah. Did you give Representative Ellis another packet of the proposal?
Yes.
He doesn't have the proposal.
Don't
worry.
that's everybody's business rules. Here, this is what we're thinking. And that was okay. We'll get your reason.
Don? John, would you give us that citation again?
Which one?
What you just read,
the amendment?
Number one.
The amendment that you're talking about now is an H up in the.
Okay, I'm talking about the one you just read. You've got to work.
Representative Adams, could you be content to work off of my
sure.
copy here?
Let's go.
Okay. The chair would entertain a motion to adopt amendment number 3.
So moved.
Okay. Is there objection to amendment number 3?
Yeah. That's just a one page, right, Mr. Chairman?
Right. It's 0306LH up at the top, Representative Perkins.
Reading for council is
right. Seeing none. No objection?
No objection.
Amendment passes. Amendment number 4 is 5-0306LI, little I. It removes a redundant section in the statute addressing defining nurses.
We added a section 17 that defines nurses, and nurses are already defined under that statute, under statute paragraph 11.
Is there any objection to amendment number 4?
Okay, let's see. Delete Bill's mind. Let me, Mr. Chairman, just follow it. Make sure that we're on the here. Let's see. 27 minus 5 is 6. Has to do with nurses, right? Page 30. What's the significance of that, Mr. Chairman?
It's just a renumbered sections after removing the section of the nurses.
Objection to amendment number 5. Amendment number 4, it passes. We're now on amendment number 5.
This is 5 to 10.
Right.
Check, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
I'm going to speak to the objection.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, the reason for the objection is this. We've heard in the committee that there has indeed been some losses, but those losses have been real large losses, and whether it's at 10, 50, or whatever, the bonding would not have been sufficient to cover it. There appear to be no reason to increase it, say another 5,000, other than to create an additional cost on the companies. There doesn't appear to be any justification for that at this point, so I would strongly recommend that we maintain the 5.
I
call the questions on the motion.
Certainly. My point on that would be that discussions with the sponsors, the testimony in subcommittee was that above $10,000, the costs become prohibitive, but at $10,000, they maintain the same formula as if under the existing $5,000 bond. The original proposal from the sponsors was for $50,000, and the sponsors were inclined to go along with the 10 since it didn't create a particularly onerous burden on the industry at that level. So I guess we do a show of hands on amendment number 5. All in favor of the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, one correction. Since my friend here only has one hand, can I raise up two?
Oh.
This guy here.
Oh, you mean you're missing? Yeah, okay. All in favor of amendment number 5, indicate by raising your hand. All opposed?
Object.
Motion passes 4-1. Amendment number 5 has been adopted. The amendment number 2. Is there any objection to amendment?
I need to clarify. On amendment number 6, the purpose of this amendment was to There's a section in the bill that says if an insurer retains a postal receipt, the postal receipt is considered proof that they actually met their was to require that they mail the notice of cancellation in such a way that they get a return receipt to indicate whether or not the notice was actually delivered. Therefore, we need to change the last line of this amendment so that it reads that indicates that notice has been delivered, period, instead of mailed to the name insured.
Then it appears that the whole thing is wrong there. We basically asked for a certified return receipt request.
Yes, but we didn't understand that the drafter did not say it. He was not able to locate the specific words to require the right kind of receipt, so what he did was to write words that said what the receipt had to accomplish.
Well, let's have
to amend the amendment. Insert, delete the word mailed and insert the word delivered. Is there any objection to the amendment?
Yeah,
the
that's still a little awkward. Mr. Colton now has a better language to be consistent with what he's done in the past. I think we understand. You want it to be sent out certified return receipt request, correct? And I think there's more direct way of doing it. Do you have some suggestions?
This is not our amendment, but.
Why don't we just say it shall be mailed a certified return receipt request?
I think that's what we're talking about.
So after shall, shall be mailed return receipt return certified return receipt request.
It's just a different way of saying the same thing.
Well,
is there a particular policy reason
why? Because
a
postal receipt is a specific document, I recall. Is that, well, Bill, you showed me, probably, that's a...
Well, that's something different. I think the question here is what if it comes back undelivered? That's not the way it's written, the way it's amended. It says it has been delivered. If it comes back, they can't find the guy. I think the word delivered, you've got a problem with it.
Mr. Chairman, there are two things that happen. One is the company, as I understand, can take the mail to the post office and they in turn get a receipt that it's been delivered to the post office. And that is probably called the postal receipt, at least. It's been received at the post office. The other would be the certified return receipt requested. Now, to indicate that the notice had been mailed to the name insured, that's almost impossible to do.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the best we can require is at least they do a certified return receipt, and then, so.
Thank you, Representative Curtis. I understand the distinction. I appreciate that now. Thanks for clarifying that for me, because I didn't understand the difference between the two. Is there a motion? Would you be willing to withdraw your? And can we have a motion that would insert the language certified return receipt requested?
You'd ask for a moment about the language, and perhaps if you remove everything after shall, say mail the notice by certified mail with the return receipt request. I think that's fairly correct.
So moved. Is there any objection to the amendment to the amendment? Hearing none. Any objection to the motion or to the amendment? Seeing no objection, amendment number 6 as amended pass. Amendment number 7.
Move amendment number 7.
Is there any objection?
I'll object, Mr. Chairman, for the sake of discussion. Let's go to the page. To make the good faith effort to provide notice of cancellation to the insurer, that's wide open. I think I understand the intent. But the question on the insurer is, what constitutes a good faith effort? We talked about going through the telephone books, et cetera. You can go both ways. The company is left somewhat precarious as to how to prove they've done it. And it just seems like it's a little open. I mean, we can just have a little discussion. If the spoke has a better suggestion.
Our position on this is we prefer not to see this. I don't really have a suggestion other than but we all understand philosophically.
It's this particular issue is just a difference of
philosophy, do we want to attempt to put something in law that makes the insurer make the extra attempt to try to locate people who are locatable, or and we encountered drafting difficulty trying to put that into phrase using the phrase of good faith effort, would certainly be subject to interpretation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think in the discussion so far that we've heard that the insurers have not acted responsibly in the past. There's always a question of sending somebody to the mail and being able to contact the person. This deals with what? This deals with cancellation of a policy. And there is always a right of appeal through the department in case a client, I guess we'll call it, feels that they have not been dealt with fairly. But there's no evidence that this is a problem in the industry right now, to my knowledge.
We've not had rash complaints on this issue. I understand what the difficulty is. I guess our preference might be to deal with it by finding the public better informed. There's a variety of ways to do that, not the least of which is the consumer version. I guess our preference is really for more flexibility in trying to respond to the concern before we lock it into the legislative language.
It's almost a matter of due diligence, too, Mr. Chairman. We're requiring that the insurer at least use the certified return with secret questioning. So we're assured that at least the notice went out, and the client has a responsibility of keeping the insurance company appraised of their most recent address. So I would say, with that in mind, perhaps this amendment of the staff is probably not needed.
Just speak for the amendment. Basically, it's a philosophical difference, is what I see the question here. Whether clearly under the contracts, the insurer has the responsibility to notice the insurance company if they move, and that is my understanding of the department's position, that should be sufficient. There was some discussion in earlier committee meetings, and there's a certain, I have a lot of concern about that the mere attempt to locate at the last policy address for the vast majority of consumers may not be adequate, and that they at least should make the additional attempt when it's clear that delivery was not made, which what the amendment proposes, to simply use those channels readily available to identify if this person is at another address. But I guess that we'll just throw it out to the committee and vote it up with that. The objection being maintained, all those in favor of amendment number 7, raise your hands. All those opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. Amendment passes 3-2. The next amendment before us would be Representative Furness, amendment number letter A. Representative Furness, would you like to speak to that amendment?
Page 19, minority opinion, line 14. This is something that we've gone through numerous times, Mr. Chairman. It's a matter of the cancellation notice under the personal policy. The recommendation is to take it from 20 days to 30 days versus 60 days. With that in mind, I would move the amendment as unanimous consent.
Check. Is there any debate? Seeing no debate, proceed to a vote. All those in favor of Amendment A, indicate by raising your hand. 1, 2. All those opposed? 3. Amendment number 8 fails. Representative Furness, Amendment B.
B, line 19, page 19, line 27. The first amendment had to do with the personal policy. The second amendment has to do with the commercial policy. Again, the gentleman was known for the rationale there. And the recommendation is to maintain it at 30. Days rather than 60 days.
Jeff, certainly it's in discussions with the sponsors, they want to maintain the additional notice, especially in the commercial area. there any additional discussion? Seeing no additional discussion, proceed to a vote. All those committee members in favor of the amendment, please indicate by raising your hands. All those committee members opposed, same sign. The motion fails 2-3. I think we've dealt with proposals C and D already.
C and D, number E, Mr. Chairman, page 20, minus 25. After A, we insert personal business or commercial insurance here.
Can we just take a second to look at that, Representative Curtis?
Let's see.
I'm having some difficulty because the lines are kind of offset.
Well, okay. Well, it would read here, Mr. Chairman, in fact, it would eliminate the bottom half here. The amendment is in effect covers two items here. It would read here, an insured may not fail to renew a personal business or commercial insurance policy. Unless a written notice of non-renewal is mailed or delivered to the name insured at the address shown in the policy at least 30 days before the expiration of the policy. As it reads now, Mr. Chairman, this section covers personal on lines 24, and it covers the business and commercial policy on line 29. This amendment basically brings in a compromise whereby lines 28, we speak of 45 days for a business policy, and we're proposing that both the personal business and commercial be at a 30-day. Increasing one and shortening the other.
You're increasing the notification for cancellation of, or for non-renewal of a business and commercial policy?
No, we're shortening that from 45 days to 30 days, but increasing it for a personal, let me understand, for personal from 20 days to 30 days.
I think I understand now. Yes.
What you're doing is just making all the uniforms.
Right, that's a whole attempt. Yeah, we got all these different timelines to make it uniform.
Do the sponsors have a position on that?
Yeah, we don't like it. we don't like one from 45 to 30 days for commercial specials. Of course, we have no problem 20 to 30 for personal, but not 45 to 30.
Well, I'd like to divide the question.
No, it's not to my benefit to divide the question.
Well, if there's a motion to divide the question, Representative Ellis, did you make a motion to divide the question?
No, I didn't.
Okay. the chair would like to divide the question.
Oh, sister, what would I just withdraw my amendment there? We'll leave it as it is.
Okay. All right. Amendment E has been withdrawn. That concludes the amendments, and they should be incorporated into the substitute. We should move on. And now we need a motion to represent the amendment having been incorporated into the House of the Ed. I would like to move the committee substitute for House Bill 46, Labor and Commerce, in all its glory and weight. The amended version of the work draft 503-06L as amended. Dated 3/23. Do the next committee referral with an individual recommendation. Are there objections to the motion?
Objection.
Call the question.
No objection, motion passes.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I think we need to commend the department and the members from the private sector for their really diligence in working with this piece of legislation.
And thank you for all your work and patience, Representative Furness. Also, I really appreciate your patience.
Even though I got a role in there.
Proposing, yeah. So, appreciate it. You did a very good job presenting the issues in a good manner. We appreciate it.
Just keep your files for the floor. We'll be
okay.
Back.
seeing that and being the time being after 4 o'clock, we're going to hold over House Bill 5 till next week. And Representative Boucher, is there a particular reason you want to address it?
We may all grow old together on that.
Did you want to move it?
I'd like to get it.
Let's do it.
Okay, well, there's a proposed committee sending you right your files on House Bill 5, and your files are before you. We're all willing to stick around and do it.
Thank you.
I appreciate
it. I already kicked my schedule in my head today.
Yeah.
I've already had the whole meeting about the vote today.
Representative Boucher, are you familiar with the new proposed committee?
We got the thing.
Okay, are you familiar with the new proposed committee substitute?
Oh, that was only 3 pages.
It should be in your file.
Yeah, we're just about taking everything.
And place it in the title, too.
That's right.
Okay,
so,
we strike everything that follows the list.
We just said
we're telecommunicating.
Yeah, right. That's fine.
Okay, can we have a motion for the new committee substitute?
I move the committee substitute for House Bill number 5, Labor and Commerce, Work Draft 50123X, Kramer 32487, be moved to the next committee referral with individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the motion?
Call the question.
Seeing no objection, motion passes. That concludes the business of the committee today. The Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned. 14.